I'll show you politics in America. Here it is, right here. I think the puppet on the right shares my beliefs. I think the puppet on the left is more to my liking. Hey, wait a minute. There's one guy holding up both puppets. Shut up. Go back to bed, America. Your government is in control.
Read my lips.
Just send your cash.
There has never been so many lies, so much deception.
Doesn't anyone notice this? I feel like I'm taking crazy pills.
Please clap.
It's time for the Mike Madison Show, a new breed of conservative talk. Now, here's your host, Mike Madison.
Showtime!
Woo! All right, good morning. Welcome to the Mike Madison Show here at 103.9 WYAB. I am your host for 2 hours a day from 9 to 11, offering up a safe space to the independent thinkers out there, beholden to no party, no politician. I've got much of the first hour today may be dedicated to a couple of pieces that I ran across, a couple of very well-written pieces. One of them from somebody who was he's an economist at John Jay College. He's written a piece really taking the left to task, particularly over COVID, and it's just so well-written. And I initially heard this guy interviewed on the Jimmy Dore show. Jimmy Dore is a very progressive liberal guy, but he's not a Kool-Aid drinker. He's an independent thinker. That's all I care about. You can disagree with me, but if you think for yourself and you can go against the herd, then I consider you a fellow traveler. So a couple of very interesting pieces that we're going to get into, and then we're going to get into a little bit of our old friend COVID news. I don't know if people are paying attention to these things with the woke agenda that's going on, that's dominating conservative media, with the Ukraine-Russia conflict that's going on and everything around that. There's other news that's going on, and they may be doing a sneak attack with us on COVID. I've got some clips that suggest these things are coming, and one really particularly surreal clip from China that we'll get into in just a little bit. I know we're probably sick of talking about COVID. I know I certainly am, but I am always casting a wary eye, whether it's central bank digital currencies and any of these things that I see on the horizon, I'm keeping an eye towards them. And so we're going to take a look at the direction things are headed right now. We need to steel ourselves. There may be more battles ahead when it comes to the COVID stuff. Quote of the day today is Jack Kerouac said, "Great things are not accomplished by those who yield to trends and fads and popular opinion." Great things are not accomplished by those who yield to trends and fads and popular opinion. So maybe this show is doing great things, because I certainly do not. I don't follow trends, fads, and popular opinion on this show, for whatever value there is to that. First piece I ran across started with this quote. It's by a woman, Margaret Anna Alice. She's a commenter on narratives, propaganda, these types of things. She wrote a great piece. It starts with this quote from Desmond Tutu, Archbishop Desmond Tutu. He said, "If you are neutral in situations of injustice, you have chosen the side of the oppressor. If an elephant has its foot on the tail of a mouse and you say that you are neutral, the mouse will not appreciate your neutrality." You know, this show today really needs to be on a left-wing station. I need to be on NPR or any of the other stations around town. I've said many times I would love to have a show on a left-leaning network, because I don't hate people who vote Democrat. I don't hate people who have classical liberal ideas. I actually have great appreciation for a lot of those things. It's just the left that's lost its mind. But I believe there are always possibilities to walk people back when they realize the insanity they've been involved in. And a lot of this is about the left stuff. In this piece by Margaret Anna Alice, she says, "The first phase of the obedience, prison, conformity experiment is over. How did you do? If you've ever wondered," and she's referring to the last couple of years during the COVID regime. She says, "If you've ever wondered how you would have behaved in Nazi Germany, Stalinist Russia, Mussolini in Italy, it's Kukescu. I can't say this guy. Who is it? Ceausescu? Oh, gosh. Brutalizing that. Romania, the tyrant of Romania. Or China, either Maoist or contemporary, now you know. If you've ever wondered how you would have behaved in Nazi Germany, Stalinist Russia, Mussolinian Italy, or China, Maoist or contemporary, now you know. If you've ever wondered how you would have reacted to the Milgram obedience experiment, now you know. In this piece, you can always email me, MikeMadison@WYAB.com. I'll send you this piece because it's very interesting. It goes through many of the sociological experiments that they have done on humans. Many of us have seen these things. The Milgram experiment was the experiment where they essentially you turned a dial and delivered a shock to somebody that you couldn't see, but you could hear them scream. And when somebody with a clipboard and a white lab coat showed up and said, okay, we want you to push the button, and you pushed it, and you heard just a little muffled, ow. And for most people, you would stop hurting somebody else. But when somebody of authority, in this case, somebody in a lab coat with a clipboard said, okay, we need you to turn up the dial a little bit and push the button again. And they would do it, and they would hear the subject on the other side of the wall. They couldn't see this person, and the person that was doing it was actually an actor. The actor would scream a little bit louder. And the person would obviously, you could see on their face during this experiment, it was filmed, you could see that they were distressed, that they were hurting this other person, but they refused to stop in most cases because this person of authority, this person in a white lab coat with the clipboard, kept telling them they needed to keep doing it. And so they did it. There are many of these experiments. There's the Stanford prison experiment. I believe, and I didn't play all of these, there's a video link to all of these. I believe that was where people were tasked with being prison guards and prisoners, and they found that the people who were tasked with being prison guards eventually took on some pretty sadistic procedures. That little bit of authority that they got over other people made them really pretty brutal people. There was another experiment done called the ASH, A-S-C-H, conformity experiment. And it was an interesting one where they would have a picture on a board. It was actually comparing the length of lines. So you would have one line on the left, and then distance from it a little bit on the right, you'd have three lines of different lengths. And one of those was quite obviously the same length as the one on the left. And they would say, you know, is the if you're looking at the right, is line one, two, or three, or A, B, and C, which one of those is the same length as the one on the left? It was obvious when you look at it which one it was, but what they found was they took five people at a table, four of them were actors, one of them was the subject, and when the other four actors all pointed to the wrong answer, most of the time, the person who was not the actor, the subject of this, would conform with the rest of them and answer an obviously wrong answer, and you would see in their face that they knew that they were saying something wrong, but they just didn't dare go against the group. And man, this is what we see throughout society. We have another experiment here. And this was an interesting one. People would walk onto an elevator. You'd have actors walk in an elevator. So the elevator doors open and somebody would be facing out like we all do. All of us sane people. You go onto an elevator. You walk in. You turn around. You face the door. You go up a few floors. Other people come in. They walk in facing you, and then they turn around and they face the door as well, right? That's normal human behavior. But what they did was they had the subject would go onto an elevator by themselves. They would get in, they'd turn around, they'd be facing the door, they'd go up a floor, and several people would walk into the elevator, but instead of turning around to face the door, they would continue to face the back wall. And the majority of the people, the subjects that they were studying, the majority of the people would look around, and then at first they thought it was odd, but then they would just turn around and face the wall as well. They didn't know why they were doing it. They knew it made no sense, but they did not dare do something differently than the people around them. In some of the cases, the people would turn to the right and face the right wall, and the subject would suddenly turn and face the right wall. They just could not go against the crowd, and this is something that I think I largely underestimate. I believe that independent thought is inherent in all of us. But maybe it's just not true. And I don't know if there's a subset. I don't know what the percentage is. But from what I witnessed over the past couple of years when it comes to the COVID cult, we certainly probably saw, what, 60-70% of the people that participated in some way, the 30% of them that are still out there right now wearing masks because the crowd could, the crowd told them to wear masks, their friends wear masks, the authorities tell them to wear masks, so they wear masks. And they are still doing it today. They can't break the conditioning. They don't know that they've been experimented on. And this is a fantastic piece. This piece is written by Margaret Ann Alice. And the title of her piece, because she says, you know, if you know what you would have done in Nazi Germany by looking at your behavior over the past 2 years. How many people have you said, you know, if you had lived in Nazi Germany times and you saw the wrangling of the Jews, the demonization of the Jews, would you have allowed that to happen? And just about every person says, it wouldn't have happened on my watch. No way. Yet we just saw 60-70% of the population of most Western countries essentially show you that they would have just blindly followed whatever the Nazi government said, whatever Hitler's government said, they would have gone along with it. Margaret Anna Alice's piece is called Are You a Good German or a Badass German? And she goes through, and let me get to her conclusion right now. She asks a bunch of questions in this article. I won't go through all of them because it's a long list, but it's, do you trust your government? Do you believe their propaganda? Do you fear what they told you to fear? Do you dismiss what they told you to dismiss? And she goes through this long laundry list. And if your answer is yes, if your answer is yes to these questions, she says, commiserations, you are a good German. You did everything your felonious, fraudulent, fatal fascist regime told you to do. You complied with tyrants. You yielded to brainwashing. You embraced ignorance. You became a COVIDian. You compromised your values. You tattled on dissidents. You called them idiots, racist, and misogynist. You wanted them to lose access to medical treatment. You cheered on intolerance. You enabled tyranny. You denied democide. You directly or indirectly caused the poverty, suffering, and deaths of millions. You've won a lifetime of shame. This is just an absolutely fantastic piece, and it's only narrowly beating out the piece I'm going to bring back in the next segment. And this is from this economics professor at John Jay University, where he takes a look at the left, what the left has done over the last 2 years, particularly when it comes to the COVID cult, and calls them out and calls them out hard. It is a beautiful, beautiful piece. I'm going to read a chunk of it when we come back. Stay with me.
You know, the day destroys the night. Night divides the day. Try to run, try to hide. Break on through to the other side.
I've said it a million times. I'm a student of human nature. I'm a failing student. I cannot figure out what is in the mind of any of people on the right, the left. I mean, it's just anywhere. I struggle with it, but I'm so curious. I was talking to Sean during the break. Just about every person I see in a mask now, my first inclination is to ask them, well, what do you think you're accomplishing? I'm just curious, not mad at you. I do want to free you from the mask. I know it's not good for your health, and I know it's accomplishing nothing, but what's the thought process? Like, I really need like a sit-down cup of coffee with somebody to really, really go through it. I've got a lot of questions for people still wearing these masks. I mean, when CNN comes out and tells you it's a facial decoration, it feels to me like they've kind of put that to bed, because that must have been the authority that you originally looked to start wearing these masks. So I've got questions. But I realize at the same time, the vast majority of time I see a trend, going back to my quote from Jack Kerouac, when I see a trend or a popular opinion, I'll be honest with you, I'm almost, my knee-jerk reaction is to oppose it, even if it's right. Sometimes the crowd is right, not often, but sometimes the crowd is right. Look, I've sat out a stock market that has been going to the moon. Just in my brain, just going, this isn't right. Now, I think I will be proven right at some point, but it's just I have something, you know, I've got a mental defect myself. I'm a contrarian. I don't know if that's in my nature. I don't know where it came from. My parents weren't contrarians. My mom might have been a tiny bit, but my father certainly was not. My father was a normie. So I admit, I mean, I've got, you know, we've all got our baggage. So maybe it's really my problem to deal with. I should self-evaluate more. But at least I admit I've got a psychological issue, which is to basically oppose every large groupthink activity. I also have an issue on the show, and that I think a lot of people take exception to. Probably not popular at the station, but I kind of appeal to people on the left. I don't demonize liberals, Democrats. A lot of them I know and like a lot. A lot of them have good hearts. I'll tell them to their face, the left has lost its mind. And about 95% of them go, yeah, you're exactly right. I don't know what the hell's happened to the Democratic Party. I hate Nancy Pelosi, but they also hate Donald Trump. The beautiful thing is I'm not trying to convince anybody to love Trump or love the Republican Party because I can't stand them either. I'm an easy person to have a conversation with, whatever side of the aisle you're on, because there is one universal concept, and that is most of us normies really have a dislike for politicians. Now, the only difference is that most people will express that to me in a conversation, or they will say it out loud, but then they will show up on polling day and pull that lever to stop that other party when they vote for these ridiculous R's or D's. The lesser of two evils. They continue to do this, although it has not worked out for you for your entire lifetime, no matter your age. Anyway, I do carry a little bit of water. I don't really think I call it making excuses, but I appeal to people's better nature and say you should reach out to the people on the left that you might disagree with rather than trolling them, rather than calling them names on social media. Maybe it's time for a conversation, because I hate to tell you, you ain't going to change the country by yourself. The 30% of people who are beholden to Donald Trump are not going to change the world without another 30, 40, 50% of people along with you. We're going to muddle through in this divided country that we have, and the politicians, the elites among us, got to quit using that word. They're not special people. The oligarchs are going to continue to have their way while we're all fighting in the streets. So this piece is written by a guy that I believe is probably a pretty left-wing guy. His name is Christian Parenti, P-A-R-E-N-T-I. And again, you can email me. I think this piece is beautiful. I'm going to read the beginning of it because he calls out the left and what they've done over the past couple of years. The title of his piece is How the Organized Left Got COVID Wrong, Learned to Love Lockdowns, and Lost Its Mind, an Autopsy. This is from his piece. He says, it is hard to destroy your own cause and feel righteous while doing so, yet the American left has done it. After more than two centuries at the vanguard of the struggle for freedom, the American left, broadly defined, executed a volte-face, V-O-L-T-E-F-A-C-E. I'm not sure exactly what that means. I'll look it up. Executed a volte-face and embraced anti-working class policies marketed as purely technical public health measures. For 2 years, the left has championed policies of surveillance and exclusion in the form of punitive vaccine mandates, invasive vaccine passports, socially destructive lockdowns, and radically unaccountable censorship by large media and technology corporations. For the entire pandemic, leftists and liberals, call them the lockdown left, cheered on unprecedented levels of repression aimed primarily at the working class. Those who could not afford private schools and could not comfortably telecommute from the second homes. Almost the entire left intelligentsia has remained psychically stuck in March of 2020. Its members have applauded the new biosecurity repression. He's got some words in here I don't understand. See, these people are intelligent. And calumniated as liars, grifters, and fascists, any and all who dissented. Typically, they did so without even engaging evidence and while shirking public debate. Among the most visible has been Noam Chomsky, the self-described anarcho-syndicalist who called for the unvaccinated to, quote, remove themselves from society, unquote, and suggested they should be allowed to go hungry if they refuse to submit. In Jacobin, a magazine claiming to support the working class in all its struggles, Branko Marketic demanded the unvaccinated be barred from public transportation. Quote, one obvious course of action is for Biden to make vaccines a requirement for mass transport. Journalist Doug Henwood has scolded the unvaccinated with, quote, "Get over your own bloated sense of self-importance." But Henwood has championed shutting down all society in the name of safety while refusing to engage counterarguments, a combination that suggests a bloated sense of self-importance of his own. Other left intellectuals like Benjamin Bratton, author of Verso book on the pandemic called Return of the Real, are notable for hiding amidst academic blather. Quote, "The book's argument is on behalf of a positive biopolitics that may form the basis of viable social self-organization, but this is less a statement on behalf of the political..." Good Lord. The American civil... this is again from this guy's piece. "Even the American Civil Liberties Union, long a bastion of objective thinking and civil liberties absolutism..." Now, many of us may have some arguments with some of that, but the American Civil Liberties Union, the ACLU... they've done things that have angered conservatives that I've actually been in favor of, because conservatives largely really don't believe in civil liberties when there's things that you don't want to exercise in your own life. This goes back to many things that we're all for freedom except for the freedoms we don't want, and then we're happy to have people stripped of the freedoms that we don't really care about. It's not real freedom. It's conservative freedom with a little asterisk behind it. But I have had my problems with the ACLU as well. But it says even the ACLU has supported the mandates, lockdowns, and censorship. David Cole, the group's legal director, debased himself in the New York Times with a tortured op-ed explaining how everything the ACLU stood for over the last 100 years suddenly did not apply during the season of freak out and overreach. When activist left influencers did stray from the political line, it was to occasionally harumph about how school closure would be okay if we just had, quote, free child care for all. That argument is so flimsy, one wants to respond with yes, and let's call these new socialist child care centers public schools. This piece goes on and on. I won't read anymore. I'm not a big one for reading, but this entire piece is worth reading. As they just go through this particular professor from John Jay College goes through and picks apart the left. This left, who professes to be for the working guy, for the poor, was absolutely happy to see the poor oppressed, stripped of their livelihoods. Oh, they were cheered that they sent you a little $1,200 check. They upended the entire way of life for the working class, for the middle class, the ones that these people profess to fight for, and they're still doing it up to and including today. And I'm going to show you in a second. Now, this is probably not over. Now, this is the beautiful thing. I look for writers like this, even if they're on the left, because it's not effective for somebody. Don Jr. is not going to convince somebody on the left to be less leftist. Trolling people is not going to convince them, but the people on the left that are saying, looking around to their fellow travelers and saying, "We have lost our minds, people. What are we doing? This is not what we believe. This is not what we've been fighting for years." Those are the people that will be most effective at waking people up on the left. The first piece from Mary Alice and this piece from Christian Parenti. These are two important pieces, I believe, and so well written, to call out the absolute insanity of what we've seen. But we'll see if a well-written piece, some logic from people on the left, can overcome what was shown in these experiments of people being so easily conditioned to be willing to hurt other people and themselves as well. There's a whole lot of people across the political spectrum who are happy to actually hurt themselves if authority tells them to do it. This is why at this radio show in particular, I tell you, don't fall in love with your politicians. They will convince you to do things against your best interest time and time again. When we come back, we're going to take a look at why I'm casting a weary eye on COVID again, because I don't know if you've paid attention, but there are headlines coming from China that should concern all of us. Do you remember what we were talking about back in February? I'll never forget. February of 2020, as I was reporting on this show about the lockdowns in China, and I remember saying out loud, "Can you even imagine if they tried to do that here in the United States?" Little did I know. I need to feel your touch. I need your understanding. I need your love so much. We are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WIAB. I don't know if people are paying attention. We are living in Groundhog Day. It's a little bit more than 2 years from the anniversary of when the COVID stuff kicked off. Of course, we found out now that back in 2019, they were already seeing COVID in England, I believe in Germany. They've gone back and kind of done a post-mortem on this thing and found out that it was circulating for a while before that we decided to lose our collective minds over it. But it's the headlines are coming out now, just like they came out in February of 2020. And I think it's worth paying a little bit of attention to because we're so distracted with some other things that I think they're trying to sneak attack, a COVID sneak attack. Chinese authorities on last Tuesday extended a lockdown in Shanghai to cover all of its 26 million people. Despite growing anger over quarantine rules in the city. Now, check this out. Where latest results show, again, they have locked down 26 million people in Shanghai. Latest results show only 268 symptomatic daily COVID-19 cases. That's according to Reuters. 268 cases. Symptomatic cases of COVID doesn't mean that they're in the hospital, doesn't mean that they're at risk of dying, and those are not deaths. Those are 268 cases, and they have locked down 26 million people. I ran across this audio. This is a guy filming from his home in Shanghai, and by home, I mean his high-rise. You know, they are packed in there. I don't know if you've seen some of these Chinese cities. They are something to behold, including the ghost cities. I've talked about it often, but if you've not ever searched for images of China ghost cities, you need to check that out. Even better, go find some videos of it. The communist government in China, just to do make work jobs for their citizenry, probably to keep them from rising up against their totalitarian control there, they got to give them jobs. And so they built entire cities the size of Manhattan that about a few dozen people live in. That may be a bit of an exaggeration, but it's literally handfuls of people in giant areas the size of Manhattan. It's really creepy to go look at all these brand new buildings, tons of steel and concrete, years and years of construction, and you'll see like one guy riding his bike down the what would be like riding down Broadway in New York City. One guy. There's no traffic because there's nobody living there. These are ghost cities. But this is Shanghai. It is not a ghost city. It's a heavily populated area. And this guy is filming from his balcony. And he's looking out over a green area. It almost looks kind of like a Central Park. If you can imagine downtown New York City overlooking a green space, but all you see around it is high rises. And it's at night, so everything's lit up. You can see all the windows are lit up in all of these high rises. And this is the audio that he gets of these people in Shanghai as they are screaming from their balconies. This is an open-air prison in China right now.
This is the real thing. We have 2,000 people. Everyone is screaming. 要命了，就刚刚五分钟前头，俺们叫俺们几个了，现在突然之间，所有人都叫了，要死。
So he is just panning across miles and miles of high rises there. He's got to be filming, you know, hundreds of thousands of apartments just in this skyline that he can see there. And these Chinese people are locked in their homes, sitting out on their balconies, just screaming. It really shows you the level of control they must have in China. There's video out there of Chinese citizens on their knees, showing their vaccine passports as some guys in hazmat suits slap them around and scream at them. This is what life is in China. Here in the United States, we have not seen something like that. Australia's been close. Some of these other countries, Canada's been close. To these things, but not quite as bad. But here was, you know, it seems like a lot of the COVID stuff, a lot of people want to give Vladimir Putin the Nobel Prize for Science because he cured COVID the second he moved on Ukraine. it went off the headlines, and a lot of the health people. Now, I don't watch mainstream media, so maybe I'm wrong, but it did seem like they really kind of disappeared from the conversation, Fauci and the rest of these people. But Dr. Jen Ashton, I think she's ABC News, she's back out, and of course they're trotting back out the new variants.
All right, Dr. Ashton, BA2, we've been talking about that, but there is another hybrid variant. What
That's
are we talking
correct.
About?
That's correct. And I want to really emphasize that as we hear about these new variants, it's really important that we do not turn a deaf ear to them. Not every variant is a cause for alarm, but we do need to know what's emerging because they will continue to emerge. This latest one is called XE. It's first detected in the United Kingdom back.
Now, I want you to hear what they are saying, that this particular variant, look, I almost feel stupid playing this. I don't know how many they're going to take, but they're going to roll one out. I got a clip in just a second. They're going to roll one out that's serious. So maybe they're doing this little thing. Well, you know, we're monitoring it. We're really following the science. Maybe this isn't a bad one. But I want you to hear what they say this thing is made up of. I think they're just making it up as they go now.
Back in mid-January, it is actually a virus made up of Omicron and the Omicron subvariant, BA2. It is too soon, too early to fully determine its transmissibility.
Now, if you've got a variant that's made up of the Omicron and the variant of the Omicron, isn't the variant of the Omicron already got the Omicron in it? So how do you combine a variant of the Omicron that has the Omicron in it with the Omicron itself and you become a new variant? I ain't no scientist. I ain't no doctor. I explain it every Wednesday, but that seems pretty far-fetched to me. That this is something really drastic and something really new.
Although it does appear to be more transmissible than the other two Omicron variants, it's too soon to tell whether it evades our immune vaccine protection or natural immunity, and it is too soon to tell its severity. It has not yet been identified in the U.S. officially, but the assumption is that if it's in the U.K., it is likely here, although not in high numbers.
But when is it of concern? When does a variant graduate to that?
When the World Health Organization deems it to be generally more clinically severe, and we have not seen that yet.
Gotcha.
All right. Thank you very much, Dr. Jen.
Yeah, thank you very much, Dr. Jen, for coming out and doing your fear-mongering. We'll just wait for the WHO to sound the alarms again. They were so successful the last time around. You know, what I think is so nefarious about these things, you know, I ask in the beginning segment of today's show, what are these people doing still wearing masks? That's why they're still wearing masks. They saw the news and they heard the words new variant come out. They don't pay attention to the hospitalizations. They don't pay attention to the hospitalization rates. They don't take into account the survivability of this thing for anybody under 70 years old. It's 99.99%. They don't think about any of these things. They just hear, oh, there's another one going around. So they strap on that mask before they get in the car. This is what they do, I guess. Like I said, I want to have a conversation with anybody who's still masking up. I want you to explain it to me. But they're continuing to trot this stuff out. So China is locked down. England is now reporting. They are saying there are increases coming. There is one, I don't know if this is a ray of hope or not. I find it kind of fascinating. Anthony Fauci was asked about new variants on the Sunday shows. This was as of yesterday, I guess. It said, Dr. Anthony Fauci on Sunday appeared to throw in the towel on more government restrictions over COVID-19. Pause your celebration on that till after this next break and I play the next clip. Anthony Fauci insisting it is now up to Americans to make their own medical risk assessments. Quote, listen to this. Quote, this is not going to be eradicated and it's not going to be eliminated, Fauci told ABC's This Week. Quote, and what's going to happen is that we're going to see that each individual is going to have to make their calculation of the amount of risk that they want to take. Well, gee, thanks. These are the calculations that every human being makes the moment their eyes open in the morning and they step out of their front door. We have decided that even though there is a risk of a slip and fall in the tub, it is worth that risk to get clean and not offend our coworkers all day with a stench. Anthony Fauci has now granted us the ability, from on high, we now have the ability to make our own individual decisions to calculate the amount of risk that we want to take. Well, gee, thanks. This should have been the narrative. This should have been the story. This should have been what everybody was told from the very beginning of this thing. If you're under 70 years old, you have basically nothing to fear. If you're obese, quit being obese. Take your vitamin D, get into some semblance of shape, boost your immune system with some good stuff, and go out there and live your lives. Well, Anthony Fauci seems to be saying maybe they're going to allow us to do that. Isn't that nice from Dr. Fauci? I've been doing that since the day this thing rolled out, making my own decisions on risk and looking at all of the different things they rolled out and realizing that nothing that they recommended was going to mitigate any risk whatsoever. My only desire was to just try to maintain my health and a good working immune system, and it seems to have worked. When I come back, though, I'm going to see if I can find this clip. Former CDC director has come out and said something that, like I say, I'm just trying to cast a wary eye towards the future. We need to anticipate these things. We're too reactionary, not proactive enough. You got to start wrapping your mind, the mind of your loved ones around these things, and recognize it when it starts. See, this is how they slow you into these things slowly and then all at once, right? That's what we saw with COVID. It was 2 weeks to stop the spread and then 2 years, 2 years of totalitarian control. I don't think they're done with us. Again, there's a lot of things I keep talking about that I hope I'm wrong about, but this next clip, this is what concerns me. Be right back. You know, I'm like a lot of people. I'm over COVID. It does seem like it's gone for the vast majority of us, except when we walk into a store and see these people in their ridiculous masks, and we're reminded that many people are still insane. They were broken. They were broken. They're victims. We have to remember, I try to remind myself constantly, these are victims of brainwashing and propaganda, and as those human nature experiments I talked about earlier in the show illustrate, many people are susceptible to being mentally broken by people in authority. So I'm over COVID too. It feels like it's gone, but I'm just telling you, we need to be ready for anything at this point. Eternal vigilance, as they say. So check this out.
My friends, welcome. Yesterday, I posted my report detailing the Gates Foundation's funding of gain-of-function research into H5N1, attempting to get it to cross over into humans. And I asked the question, is bird flu going to be the next pandemic? What I didn't realize was that just last week, former CDC director...
By the way, there's a huge bird flu outbreak right now. They're killing millions of birds as we speak. Zoos are hiding their birds. They're behind the scenes, behind Ukraine, behind Hunter Biden's laptop, behind all of these other stories. The bird flu story is kind of circulating around.
Robert Redfield answered my question.
Yeah, I think we have to recognize, I've always said that I think the COVID pandemic was a wake-up call. I don't believe it's the great pandemic. I believe the great pandemic is still in the future, and that's going to be a bird flu pandemic for man. It's going to have significant mortality in the 10 to 50% range. It's going to be trouble, and we should get prepared for it. I do believe that the pandemic risk is a greater risk of the national security of the United States than Korea, China, Russia, Iran. And we ought to start investing proportional to that national security risk so we're prepared.
Wow. So the former CDC...
Yeah, so that's your former CDC director. That's that Redfield character. Now, he's done a little bit of truthiness as the COVID czar of Maryland, pointing out that many of the people in Maryland who were sick, were in hospitals, and were dying had been vaccinated. He did come out and tell the truth about that, but he's a vaccine salesman, after all, with the CDC. And he is telling us we need to invest just like we do with the Defense Department. That's what we need. We need a $1 trillion bio national security program. And the next one is the biggie. He said, this wasn't the pandemic. It was a pandemic. But we need to get ready for the pandemic. And he believes it will be a bird flu. There's bird flu circulating around. I chicken littled a lot last week when I talked about financial crises, central bank digital currencies. I'm going to try not to chicken little too much this week, but I'm just telling you, these stories, I've got PTSD from February of 2020. China lockdowns, bird flu circulating around, new variants. I don't think they're done with us. I'll just put it that way. There is much more for the powers that be to accomplish to let us up right now. Be right back.
I see the shadows on my face. People have told me I don't look the same. Maybe I lost weight. I'm playing hooky.
All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB. I am unapologetically, I'm a libertarian guy here. You know, when I first started this show, I didn't really talk about it that much because I came to be a libertarian from being a conservative, and I'm on conservative talk radio. And for a while, I felt like I was going to, you know, kind of lay some breadcrumbs, just get people to start questioning things. But I'm unabashedly a libertarian guy, heading towards being an anarchist. Now, that's not popular. A lot of people don't understand that, and they see anarchists as being the, you know, the black hoodie guys, but I'm just somebody who, you know, at this point, I just don't like politicians. I don't want anybody over me for any reason at any time, because we've shown over the past couple of years, these are not particularly smart people, not making the best decisions for us. So I'm much more open to basically no government. I've been kind of a minarchist, meaning a very, very small government. I'm to the point now where I realize, even at these small local levels, I'm so disgusted by the petty tyrants at the local levels. I'm just saying, look, government just doesn't work. Let us just all, we'll figure it out. I promise you. And I tell you again, just imagine your life with no politics in it whatsoever. Imagine the richer, easier friendships you would have. Now, politics in this country is so toxic. Doesn't matter if it's the local level, the state level, the federal level. These people bossing us around are ruining our lives. Even when their policies don't reach us, just the fact that they're involved and we're all so worked up about it has got us at each other's throats. I mean, it's just politics just destroys everything. So I'm on my way to being an anarchist, and I find myself, and I'm going to play a clip in just a second, wondering why there are not more people who are like me, either libertarian or heading towards anarchy when you see how your government is. It looks like we got a call. Let me see if they hung on for me. Caller, are you with me? Hello? All right. Yeah, if you call in, you're going to have to hold for a second. I have to board up the doors when I come in here. I'm operating a one-man show. I wanted to play this clip kind of dovetailing what we're talking about earlier with COVID restrictions. And I've said it many times, they've broken everything. They've broken supply chains. They've broken out inflation. Of course, that's been decades in the making. They've broken the labor markets. They've broken our healthcare system. Well, unless you're on the board of directors of a hospital that has made millions and millions of extra bucks swabbing noses and jabbing arms. I can't begin to tell you how disgusting the medical mafia is after this thing. I need to do a whole show basically tracking down all of the money that went to all of these healthcare organizations. You think they love you, and that's why they're telling you to test and treat and take their pills and take their shots. It's money, man. It's just money. They've been making it hand over fist, and this is one of the reasons why COVID isn't going anywhere, because they're not done making the money. But they've broken everything, and then your government took over airport security in the wake of 9/11. You remember this when they set up the TSA? And I don't know, was the TSA in existence before that? It might have been, but they didn't go in and federalize all of the checkpoints at airports. You know who has the best, most vested interest in making sure that you get safely from point A to point B? The airline that's taking your money and wants you to give them some money again in the future. They're the ones that really have a dog in the hunt. So if you want somebody to do it effectively, efficiently, airport security should be left to the airports, to the airlines who are actually taking your money and have an incentive to make you happy. Not a federal government that's accountable to nobody and really doesn't give a crap if you live or die on the way there or not, because they don't have a dog in the hunt. You still got to go through the TSA checkpoints, and I've said it, and I'll say it again. They fail 90 to 95% of the time to detect any dangerous items when they're tested. You know, they test these people. They try to send people through checkpoints with explosive materials and firearms and knives, and 90 to 95% of the time, the TSA fails on this, yet they continue to get more funding. They continue to harass. They continue to molest our children, our wives, our grandparents at checkpoints. Are we really that different than China? I don't know. Check it out. Next time you go through a TSA and you get one of these TSA guys, again, one of these petty tyrants, back to our human psychology experiments that show that somebody with even a modicum of power over somebody else will exercise it to its fullest extent. Oh, I've dealt with some of these TSA people. Boy, you're supposed to put your stuff in a bucket, and you grab the, you know, two buckets behind because the buckets are moving. Bucket, the first bucket. Belt two. They just start shouting stuff at you because they're just little petty tyrants that have never accomplished anything in their lives, and they got this little bit of power over their fellow citizens, and boy, do they love to exercise it. It's a long lead up into this clip. Here's your government. Here's your government on the case.
This is a live look at Austin's airport, where the TSA is coping with a staffing shortage, resulting in long wait times for travelers. But help is on the way. 15 federal TSA agents will soon be deployed to Austin's airport, bringing the total number of agents to 50. Plus, the TSA is adding a 15% retention bonus for current screening officers. The agency is also doubling the number of canine resources at the airport. Last month, the Austin Airport Director sent a letter to a top TSA official saying the airport was dealing with unprecedented passenger volume and needed at least 100 more agents.
Yeah. They're deploying more. They got more dogs going. Please, to any of the dogs who are listening, got to be some out there riding around in the car. To any of my canine friends, I love you. I'm just such a giant fan of dogs. Quit letting them use you against us. More TSA, more drug-sniffing dogs, more bomb-sniffing dogs, and now they're rolling out the COVID-sniffing dogs. Quit weaponizing the dogs against us. Dogs are pure. They're pure love when you treat them correctly, but you're turning dogs into tyrants as well. There were reports all over the country of TSA being massively understaffed, long wait lines. We're talking about hours and hours of hours of these citizens queuing up and waiting for TSA molestations to let you through to board an airline slave. And this is happening all over the country. Again, I ask, why are not more people wanting to just basically abolish the federal government? Why are you still wrestling over control of it between the R's and the D's? Got a caller in the line. Caller, are you with me?
Yes, Mike. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm good. I'd like to bring up, you were talking about TSA. Today, if you go into the VA hospital, you are treated like you are from somewhere else that is a threat to this country.
Oh, Lord. Same situation.
You go through. They've got a minimum of two guys there that with their pistols, and they're normally bigger than all the veterans usually going through the place. And you have to empty your pockets. Everything goes through a little x-ray deal. You have to step through a device that will make things go off, of course. And when I do it, I'm going to make things go off because I got so much metal in me. And the last time, one of these so-called officers dropped down with his hands on it just because I made a thing go beep. I was a threat, and I thought I was going to be shot.
Good Lord. Well, you know, this is this security theater. It is no different than COVID stuff. They rolled this out after 9/11, where now you can't go into a ball game without essentially raising both hands, showing your palms, spinning through some booth. They have the right to stop you on the street and grab your backpack and look inside it.
Let me stop you. No, they don't have the right.
You are. Well, you're right. You're right. You're exactly right. They don't have the right, but they exercise their authority. And they have treated us all. We're all suspects of something all the time, and it's all in this guise. They're trying to keep us safe from terrorists. And conservatives bought it hook, line, and sinker. They thought there was a terrorist behind every tree. They thought every Muslim was out to cut their throat because they fell for the propaganda on the war on terror, just like the left fell for the COVID propaganda.
Well, I want to make one statement. I'm going to leave you alone. Many years ago, I remember this. Henry Kissinger, as far as I'm concerned, is as bad as you can get is when it comes to everything he's touched for 50 years has turned to garbage.
Death.
Everything.
Death.
Okay. But yet, anytime he can breathe hard, he's on the television, and they treat him like he's God.
Yep.
Correct?
Okay. Yes.
Now, I'm trying to think. This is probably back in the 90s. He made a statement. He said, when we want to control government, we use money. When we want to control population, we use food.
Think
about it.
Yeah. Well, I tell you what, with what we're seeing right now, and we even had our president, Joe Biden, come out and tell us food shortages are real, and you better get used to it. They're coming.
It's coming. Russia gives, I think it's over 50% of the world's fertilizer.
Yeah, right.
Comes from that one area. Well, our farmers can forget about it this year.
Yeah.
You know, what fertilizers they can afford is going to be such a small amount, it's not going to make that big a difference. In Iowa, I'm trying to think of the states that they announced, that a huge amount of farmers in the beltway of where most of our grains are grown are not going to plant. They can't get the fertilizer, and the federal government has already notified many of them that they will pay them for not planting.
Oh, my gosh. Yep. This is setting up to be ugly.
What we're eating today was grown last year or beyond. What we're going to eat tomorrow could be very interesting.
Yeah. Yep. Well, Soylent Green. It's people.
Yeah, well, I'm not going to eat a bunch of bugs myself.
They're trying to push it. Hey, thanks.
All right, I got to go.
Appreciate it, man. Yeah. Thanks for the call. Yeah, I'll tell you. I mean, this is getting ugly out there. And I am somebody who's making plans for the future like everybody else. I have done this before. I've worked myself into a tizzy where I alter my entire life, and then the terrible thing doesn't happen, and I've just wasted time. So I am full speed ahead, and we'll just have to pivot at the time. But the stuff that is on the horizon right now is some pretty ugly stuff. And it is time for everybody to learn from the last couple of years and not give another inch. We gave too many inches. I gave too many inches. The first couple of months of COVID, you know, I didn't know what we were dealing with. I'm seeing these bogus videos from China showing people drop dead in the streets. I've got kids that I love. I didn't know what we were dealing with. They told us to stay home for a little while at the very beginning of this thing. I stayed home for a little while, not because I was scared for myself. I'll be honest with you, it was kind of relaxing. But I won't do that again, and none of us should, and we've got to wake up the people who were the obedient, the good Germans during the past couple of years, because I don't think they're done with us yet. And, you know, they start messing with they're messing with energy around the world, telling people to put on a sweater. Shut up, slave. Put on another sweater. You'll be fine. God knows what they're going to do to us with food. You got the president of the United States saying food shortages are real and they're coming. You know, these are them's fighting words. Well, we'll see which way it goes. But I think we need to be ready that this is not over, whether it's COVID or other things. You know, we've still got climate out there. There's climate lockdowns, driving every other day. I mean, there's just no telling what they will try. So many of the people out there I don't know what the percentage is, 60%, 70%, 80% of the people told all of the authoritarians out there, you got a green light. You can do whatever you want to us. Send us out a tiny little check here or there. We'll sit down. We'll shut up. That's a lot of people that were very compliant. Many of them you will see today when you go in the grocery store, still willing to play the game. And this just has emboldened this class of people that want to be authoritarians. They have realized it's probably, I bet you they were surprised. I don't know this for a fact. Again, back, referencing back, this whole show is predicated on this idea of they've done these psychological experiments to show that a lot of people will go along with some really absurd things if a person in authority tells them that they need to do it. So I don't know if they were surprised, but I would just imagine just sitting in this, you know, we're going to try to close down businesses. Oh, I don't know about that. You're going to have a lot of business owners up in arms if we make them shut down their way of living. We strip them of their ability to provide for their family. Yet, I would say 90% of businesses turned that key, went home, and hid in their house. 90% of pastors locked up their church, sent out an email, no more in-person services. We've been told it's too dangerous. Stay at home. Stay safe. A big portion of it, and I would imagine the people in charge thought, oh my gosh, wow, they will do anything. Then don't even get me started on an experimental shot using a technology that had failed in animal trials several times, and they rolled this thing out. And they butted up into a little bit of resistance, and so they did some mandates, and they found that people just with the threat of a mandate, the threat of possibly losing your job, maybe in 6 months, you know, a lot of people acquiesced to these shots, not because they were at a deadline where you were going to get fired the next day, but because a company rolled out a policy that said, we want everybody inoculated by October 1st. And so these people in July just went, well, I guess it's inevitable. I'll just go ahead and do it. I don't want to do it, but I guess I'll do it because in 3 months I'm going to have to do it anyway. And they just did it. There's a lot of those people. I would say that's in the 60, 70, 80% of people just said, they just shrugged their shoulders and did what everybody does. You do it about taxes. You do it about politics. You just shrug your shoulders and go, I don't know. What are you going to do? They just shrugged their shoulders and they took an experimental gene therapy. A lot of people, a whole lot of people. Now, some of those people may be rethinking their decision now. Maybe they're waking up. But I just can only imagine that without real boots on the ground, Gestapo in the streets, they were still able to get a lot of people to do things against their own interests that damaged them. They damaged our children. How many parents just allowed their kids to go to school masked, breathing in nasty air, creating bacteria traps right in front of their face, muffling their voices, not letting developing children even see the language of others? How many people listened to the hospitals who said, you can't come in and see your elderly parents that are dying? We'll let you FaceTime them. We'll let you Zoom call with them, but you can't come in here and hold their hand. And 60, 70, 80% of Americans went, duh, okay. I mean, we have really shown a level of obedience that I've got to believe really surprised some people. It sure as hell has surprised me. I'm not an authoritarian, but I never would have thought the number of Americans would have gone along with what they've gone along with across the board. It really doesn't even matter the topic. My pet thing is, if you listen to the show for any period of time, the fact that Americans, conservative, red-blooded, people consider themselves patriots, but they hand over a half of their income every year in taxes. I guess I shouldn't be surprised at anything else. You complain about prices, grumble a little bit about taxes, but you'll elect a Republican that just tells you, well, I don't think we should be taking 29% of your income, but I do think we deserve 26%. And you go, okay, that's my guy. I definitely got to elect that guy. I got to send him a check, get him elected. He only wants to take 26% of my income, not the 29% those demon rats want to take. It's that 3% that really gets conservatives excited. So I don't know why I'm surprised at what people put up with. I think I've done a podcast before I even came on air. It was, what would we not put up with? It was the topic of the entire episode. And it just went through all of these things. This was like 7 years ago. I had no idea what was coming. And now we know the little big chunk of Americans will put up with damn near anything, whether it's the TSA molesting your grandma. A TSA that we've shown fails time and time and time again at the airports, not even keeping you safe. And the threat that they're supposedly keeping you safe from barely even exists. If America would take its boot off the throat of developing countries around the world, there wouldn't be a terrorist threat anyway. We go over, we topple governments, we bomb countries, and then when they lash out, we go, oh my God, they're radicalized. Well, I wonder what radicalized them. You killing their parents, you killing their children, maybe had something to do with it. You strangling their country with sanctions and their child starved or couldn't get medical treatment and died. Maybe that radicalized them. Oh no, it's just that religion. Yeah, people are being molested at the airport right now, and Americans are putting up with it. We just, I mean, you know, TSA, you know, you really want to see sheep go through a TSA checkpoint. There's a beautiful video out there, and it wasn't meant for these purposes. It's actually drone footage of a herd of sheep. And it's kind of like you see, sometimes you'll see videos or a big flock of birds or a school of fish. And they change directions. It's almost very zen-like. It's this flow of movement of the bodies of the birds or the fish. Well, the sheep do the same thing. If you look at them from a drone, you know, you've got sheep herding dogs and stuff, and they'll start to make the sheep all move through one area. And they can get them in giant flocks to really come together at one point and go through a fence into a different pasture. It's actually quite amazing that these dogs are trained to do this and are naturally want to do this without actually attacking the sheep. They just scare them a bunch, and the sheep are so scared that they will go to this choke point and trample over each other to get through this fence. But from the drone footage, you just see them. It just looks like that school of fish, everybody going in the same direction, exactly as they're told to do. That's what TSA is. Now, I know. I travel. I've been through TSA. It's not like I'm causing any problems when I go through either. It's just, I just look at all of these things. I think there's 330 million of us. There's a few thousand of them, and yet the hurdles that we are made to jump through, it's just, I find myself baffled.
I saw a werewolf with a Chinese menu in his hand, walking through the streets of Soho in the rain.
All right, short segment here. I kind of went long last time just talking. I don't know. Sometimes it just rattles around in my head. You just see the storm clouds brewing, and I just wonder, you know, what are they going to do with us next? We seem down with just about anything. I also find myself reading more during the break of this piece by this economics professor at John Jay College. I really encourage you to take a look at it. I'll give you the title again. You can always email me, MikeMadisonWYAB.com. I'll send you a link to it. He just talks about how the organized left got COVID wrong, learned to love lockdowns, and lost its mind, an autopsy. And this piece is just fantastic. He's calling to the left. Hey, you remember what you thought about Big Pharma back in 2019? You remember that? Large segments of the left are afflicted with an astounding case of political amnesia. The central fact forgotten is that Big Pharma has thoroughly captured our public health agencies. All U.S. government public health agency budgets are heavily dependent on a fee-for-service research work contracted directly by the pharmaceutical industry in exchange for, quote, user fees. The FDA website, as if mimicking the satirical film Idiocracy, in which the FDA is purchased by a sports drink, Brondo, the thirst mutilator. Idiocracy, the documentary, states that, quote, about 54% or $3.3 billion of FDA's budget is provided by federal budget authorization. The remaining 46% or $2.8 billion is paid for by industry user fees. Meanwhile, the FDA's drug approval testing program has 75% of its budget paid for directly by pharmaceutical companies. Hey, left, you remember you knew that in 2019. You weren't big fans of the mega pharmaceutical corporations. Now, you think they're charitable organizations. Benevolent organizations that love you. They want to keep you safe. I'm going to come back. There's a funny little, well, funny, sign of the times. There's a new oil gasoline pump scam going on. It's really kind of genius. I would love to say I would never fall for it, but I'll show it to you when I come back. But this is just all quite amazing. This calling out the left from the left and saying, what are we doing here, is so valuable in these days. I think I come on this show to call out the right from the right. I call out the people who profess to be patriots and constitution lovers and lovers of freedom and liberty. And I ask, why haven't you demanded freedom and liberty all these years? Why did you acquiesce to the Patriot Act? Why did you acquiesce to the war on terror? Why did you let the propaganda work on you? Why do you support a drug war and a prison industrial complex? But I think the right is largely waking up to a lot of those things. It's a beautiful thing to see. I'll be right back.
Well, it would have been, could have been worse than you would ever know.
All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB. I guess I'll do a little bit of a public service announcement now. You know, we're going to start seeing the fuel scams now. I did check the other day. You know, you used to have locking gas caps. I'm sure these came about in the 1970s when we saw the fuel shortages, and so people were starting to guard their tank of gasoline. I checked mine the other day because it doesn't have a lock on it anymore. I don't ever pay attention to those things, but I was curious, can you pop my thing? But if my car is locked, you can't push my tank in. I mean, I guess I should have already known that, but I didn't. I guess, you know, you got to start thinking about these things now. But I thought this was kind of interesting. This is, people are going to be finding ways to get fuel, and they may be getting it from you. I thought this was kind of genius. You know, I'm not saying that I approve of this, but I guess it's something for all of us to watch out for.
We are getting new video tonight of a gas pump scheme. I want you to take a look as it is caught on camera. Imagine pumping gas only to find out it was going into someone else's tank. At ABC 10, we stand for you, and we are looking out for your wallet. ABC 10's Barbara Bingley showed...
The media loves you. They're always there for you. They only want the best for you.
Us the gas pump scheme just reported in Sacramento County.
With gas prices soaring, some are stooping to new lows to save a buck. Watch as these two drivers pull up to a fuel station at the Arco on Watt Avenue and Blackfoot Way on Sunday. The men quickly swap the nozzles and one drives away, waiting for unsuspecting customers to pull up. Manager Bobby Joel sharing it to spread awareness.
You know, it was real quick. Only took a second.
But you can see now, if you look at it, the hose comes across the pump instead of on the side itself.
He says when the victims pulled up and started pumping gas, the suspect started his meter too, counting on the victims not to notice they were paying for his gas. It's the first time in his career he's seen this. Customers were also left shocked.
Crazy. Just mad times we're living in, you know?
So do you understand? I mean, this is something that's better in a video. Essentially, what you do is you get two cars, you pull up to a gas pump, you're both in on the scheme. And while you're standing there, you from one side of the pump and the other side of the pump, you exchange the nozzles and you click them into their place, you know, on the opposing sides. Then one of the cars stays there when the other car pulls off. And then when the patsy shows up, they go in, they just pull the thing off of the cradle, right? And they stick it in their car. And the guy on the other side, which actually has the hose connected to where you just swiped your card, where you're paying for it, as soon as they see you click the handle to start putting gas in your car, they click it and start putting it into theirs. Now you're looking at the pump moving, you're seeing the dollars go up, the gallons flowing. Now I feel like you can feel fuel going into a car, but I will say I could possibly be deceived by this if I maybe they got some new technology where I can't even feel the gas going. But if I see the stuff moving and it looks like the pump is operating, and, you know, vast majority of people just click it on there and then they put the little stopper in there. You don't even have your hands on the pump. And the other guy on the other side of the pump is steady filling up his car while it's charging it to your car. It's just, like I said, it's a little bit of a PSA announcement. be on guard for the gas thieves. We're going to see these things across the board. The scams are going to increase in times of financial crisis. All kinds of new scams emerge. I watched, and I won't beat on this again, but I just really encourage people to watch The Big Short. This is the movie that documents what took place on Wall Street during the 2008 crisis. It is a maddening thing, but I love it so much because it was just, it's the story of two or three, three different groups of people, investors, who realized what a fraud Wall Street was heading into the housing crisis. They figured it out, and they realized that it was going to collapse, and they bet big on it, almost to the point of ruining themselves, because you have to watch the movie to understand it. But the Wall Streeters figured out they were in big trouble, and they start doing all kinds of illegal things to not have their fraud exposed until they themselves, the big banks, were on the right side of that trade. And the way that they did it was when they realized they had all these garbage bonds that were about to go to zero on their balance sheet, meaning they owned these bonds. When they realized that these bonds were about to explode and they were going to lose all of their money, you know what they did? Do you know what Wall Street did? They started selling them to people. They knew that these bonds were basically worthless. And instead of taking the hit themselves, they started selling them into the market, selling them to their own clients, banks like Goldman Sachs and J.P. Morgan and Morgan Stanley. They were selling these bonds that they knew were no good to their unsuspecting clients. And when I talk about clients, I'm talking about pension plans, where a lot of people's retirement is based, to charitable organizations who have endowments. All of these groups, these big banks, as soon as they realized their fraud was about to be exposed, and many of them were too stupid to realize it was gonna fall apart, but as soon as they realized it, instead of taking the hit themselves and going, "Oh my gosh, we've made a terrible mistake. This is really gonna hurt us," they go, "Oh my God, we've got to get rid of this stuff. We've got to sell this to somebody." And they sold them around the world. And it didn't just happen here in the United States, but we were the epicenter of this. But just the amount of fraud in the time of financial crisis is off the charts. You've got to be. I've noticed in my spam folder, I almost never check my spam folder, and I apologize. I've got an email aggregator that I've got several accounts. They all filter into this one thing, and sometimes it spams out listener emails. So if it takes me a while to get to you, sometimes I forget. I got to go back in and check my spam folder, but I've noticed within my spam filter, there are just a tremendous amount of people wanting to give me big checks. I have not noticed this except for probably the last 3 or 4 months. Every other email in my is, Hi, Mr. Madison. We found a check for you. A long-lost relative has deceased. I just see this in the subject line. I don't click on any of these things, but man, they are everywhere. When the ship starts to sink, everybody starts preying on each other. And so whether it's gas or financial fraud, everybody's got to be on alert. But next time you go to the pump, make sure you got the right hose. I'll be right back. All right, final few minutes of the show. I think I found something to start with tomorrow. I may just change topics completely, but this certainly spoke to me. There's a piece in The Atlantic, and I'm certainly suspect of many things in The Atlantic, although they did publish several pieces talking about how the masks were dangerous to people, that they were destructive, that they actually hurt people. I mean, there obviously are some writers and maybe even some editors at The Atlantic who are not complete nut jobs. But I just ran across this story during the break. Why the past 10 years of American life have been uniquely stupid. Subheadline is, it's not just a phase. I got to tell you, I may kind of buy into this. That's my question, too. Why have we suddenly become so stupid? And maybe it was not suddenly, but we've certainly highlighted it. It may just be social media.
I think I read a quote the other day, something that, you know, there have always been stupid people, but they've never had a national platform. And what happens is stupid people say something without social media, and it's just said, and a handful of people hear it, and maybe they laugh at them, maybe they disregard it, and we go on with our lives. Now, somebody sees it, they share it, it goes viral, and we think, oh, everybody on one side or the other are all nut jobs. So maybe that's what happened. In this Atlantic piece, it says, the story of Babel is the best metaphor I have found for what happened in America in the 2010s and for the fractured country we now inhabit. Something went terribly wrong very suddenly. You know, I think I'm on to something. 2010? When did Facebook really get cranked up? 08? iPhones, where everybody is now constantly connected to social media. I think the first iPhones were in 07? Where we first had these screens of endless scrolling and doom scrolling, as they call it. The story says, the story of Babel is the best metaphor I've found for what happened in America in the 2010s and for the fractured country we now inhabit. Something went terribly wrong very suddenly. We are disoriented, unable to speak the same language or recognize the same truth. We are cut off from one another and from the past. It's been clear for quite a while now that red America and blue America are becoming like two different countries claiming the same territory with two different versions of the Constitution, economics, and American history. But Babel is not a story about tribalism. It's a story about the fragmentation of everything. It's about shattering of all that seems solid, the scattering of people who had been a community. It's a metaphor for what is happening not only between red and blue, but within the left and within the right as well. Also in universities, companies, professional associations, museums, and even families. And boy, we have seen that, and it really is true. I mean, maybe this is why I struggle on this air, to try to see what I'm dealing with here, try to interpret what we're seeing happen, because it really is fairly new. I mean, you know, 10 years to go to full-on insane, that's pretty quick. For anybody who's lived any period of time, what's really scary is that generations right now, kids are growing up in this insanity, and it's normal to them. They don't even know a time. Really, anybody under the age of 18 right now does not know a time when people were not completely partisanly controlled, just absolute warriors for a political party or a politician. They'd think that that is completely normal, that you choose your side and then you go out and you do battle. My parents do it. Everybody does it. It's all over TV. This is how we're supposed to live. You're supposed to fight for your side. You're supposed to hate the other side. This is an entire generation of people are growing up this way. We need to right this ship before it goes too far. I may have just done the material, so I don't have to do this tomorrow, but I'll certainly be reading this article. Anything that talks about how we will suddenly have gone completely stupid over the past 10 years, and you can pick your topic, can't you? Race, gender, wars, COVID. Doesn't matter what it is. Just about everything is just completely on its head these days. And it has been a quick turn. I wanted to mention this real quick, and then I ran across two articles about Africa I'll finish up with here. I saw this headline, in Africa, U.S.-trained militaries are ousting civilian governments in coups, insurrections, and are disrupting American security strategy in the region and giving Russia an opening to gain sway. How about that? Your tax dollars have been used to train militaries and militias in African countries, and now they're toppling some of the governments that maybe we don't want toppled because they play nice with us and paving the way for Russia to win influence. This is from Fort Benning, Georgia. A flurry of military coups across Africa has disrupted the U.S. strategy of enlisting local armies to counter Islamic extremists and other security threats. The U.S. has trained thousands of African soldiers, from infantrymen rehearsing counterterrorism raids on the edge of the Sahara to senior commanders attending the U.S. Military Academy at West Point. How do you like that? West Point. We are paying to bring in African militia leaders and train them up. They're going home and they're toppling governments maybe that were some of our puppets in the first place. American foreign policy is just really something to behold, as long as we're talking about just the idiocy that we see these days. And there was one other article I had done another podcast. I hate to reference old stuff, but I did a podcast years ago that was, history is not really history. This is a kind of a stunning thing when you finally realize that what you were taught in school, you know, history is written by the victors. You can now see all of the propaganda, whether it's about Ukraine or anything else. Propaganda is so strong, and it's in our history books. So many of us who consider ourselves patriots and we know American history, we really don't know the history of America. Most people don't know what a horrific, bloodthirsty force the United States has been for the past 50 years. People still believe we're the white knights. And there's an article on Zero Hedge right now about the true size of Africa. Maybe an odd segue there, but it's pretty funny that when you look at a map right now, and I don't have time to get into how this got started. I think it was the 1500s as they tried to draw maps and make them flat when you're dealing with a globe. But Africa apparently has gotten short shrift. And when you look at a map, so many countries seem so big, and Africa seems big, but not really big. But when they look at the actual size of Africa, it's much bigger than maps show. The bottom line is, so many things that are accepted just as truth and, you know, we're peddled, things that we see, things that we learn are just simply not true. This is very interesting. Go to Zero Hedge. It says true size of Africa is shocking. It's just interesting to know. It's not only history, it's even the maps we look at. We don't even understand how the world looks because they've been lying to us about that as well. See you tomorrow.
No matter how hard you try, you can't stop us now. No matter how hard you try, you can't.